Hello, welcome to Brain Fluke. I'm Rose Stacy.
And I'm Brandon Ryder.
She's the beauty.
And I'm the brains.
And I'm just happy to be here.
And together, we explore the most bizarre and unusual,
but very real,
brain abnormalities that distort a person's reality. Today is a very exciting day.
It's our second episode!
Woo! And we're going to be discussing Capgras delusion, sometimes referred to as imposter syndrome, named after the French psychiatrist Joseph Capgras.
I'm excited, and I'm also afraid to even ask, but this is what the podcast is about, right? So I've got to.
We're here to give the people what they want.
And what they want to know is, what the ding-dang heck is Capgras delusion?
Capgras delusion, a bad deal. I'm going to do that all day. I won't.
And what in the heck does it have to do with imposters?
Well, people, buckle up, especially if you're listening to this while driving.
Okay. Rose wrote this episode, by the way.
Capgras delusion is the delusional belief that a close friend, a spouse or partner, a parent, a pet, or other loved one has been replaced by an identical imposter. And the belief is so persuasive that absolutely nothing can change their mind.
Quick note, this episode deals with self-harm and mental illness. While we like to keep this podcast light and fun, we do take mental health very seriously. If you or someone you know is struggling with mental illness, we encourage you to speak with a professional. Okay, so let's get into this further. It'd be like if you thought mango...
The dog, not the fruit. For those of you that haven't yet been subjected to my abundant love of my dog, his name is also Mango, and he looks like a delicious piece of fluffy fried chicken.
It's true. He really does look like a little chicken nugget, and it's the cutest ever. Okay, so let's say you thought Mango, the dog, not the fruit, had been replaced by a different dog, but a different dog that looked identical to Mango. That'd be Capgras delusion?
Yes, exactly. Good job.
Thank you.
Okay, so I was very inspired by your Sixth Sense reference last time.
I mean, let's be honest, who wasn't?
My mom especially was.
Thank you, Kathy.
Shouts out Kathy Stacy. Have you seen Body Snatchers?
Years ago, yes, it's a classic, and that's perfect. Spoiler alert, in that movie, the family doesn't know that they're being replaced by identical imposters, but they are, for real. Capgras delusion is kind of like that, but the opposite. A person affected with Capgras delusion believes that their loved one is being replaced by an identical duplicate, but they actually aren't, not even a little bit. So, if Cotard syndrome, which we covered in our last episode, was a reverse sixth sense, Capgras is a reverse body snatchers. I love that.
Thank you. Thank you.
You can't see it, but she's bowing right now. She's been bowing this whole time. It's a podcast, Rose. Okay, so you went with body snatchers, which is right on the money. I would have gone with Mission Impossible 2, where, of course, as everyone knows, anyone at any time and for any unearned plot-twisting reason could actually be Tom Cruise wearing a latex mask that was fabricated with a briefcase, a 3D printer, and he had a microchip on his neck. So then he actually sounded like the other person. And then there
Dang
was
it, this is so much better. You're way too good at this.
Well, thank you.
There are a few different types of similar imposter delusions, but Capgras delusion is the most common. In order for it to be Capgras, the affected person has to hold the belief that someone they love or know well has been replaced by an identical double posing as their loved one.
Okay, so it's not quite a facial recognition issue, given that they can recognize the face correctly. It's still their loved one, even if they don't believe that it is their loved one, right?
That's a great question. Capgras is considered a delusional misidentification delusion, and while a person affected with it technically is able to recognize the face as the correct face in some regards, they are unable to register it as the face of their loved one. So it's really not a proper facial recognition. This difficulty is often referred to as prosopagnosia.
Wow, that's a big word. What I want to know is when I see you, I know immediately that it's you. Beautiful, incredible, sweet, serene.
Rosie. I'm paying him to say this, folks.
How do I know this? And what causes this misidentification in patients with Capgras delusion?
Well, some people with Capgras delusion, and it's important to note that this isn't always the case, but sometimes they can actually recognize an individual when listening to their voice, and while hearing just that sound, they do not consider the possibility of them being an imposter. That notion forms only while seeing them specifically, which suggests that something is at fault in their ability to place the face properly.
That is bonkers. So it's just bonkers. If I heard your beautiful, sweet, serene, rosy voice singing, for example, Mango's theme song to him from the other room, I'd know it was you until I walked into the room and saw a total imposter playing with Mango and singing,
Mango Danger Doodle Stacy, you're the cutest dog around.
Mango Danger Doodle Stacy, you're the cutest dog in town. That's too much. I should be arrested.
Give the people what they want, Rose.
Yes, but it wouldn't actually be an imposter. It would be the real me, Rose Stacy, gleefully singing the usual Mango Danger Doodle anthem. It's a tongue twister. Only you wouldn't believe it, no matter how specific the lyrics were. In patients suffering from Capgras delusion, it has been reported that their ventral pathway remains intact, meaning that they can recognize the face as being the same as that of the person it belongs to, but the dorsal pathway, responsible for the emotional processing of facial recognition, is impaired, providing a possible explanation for the altered emotional responses upon seeing the face. These two pathways have to be working in unison for there to be normal facial recognition.
Okay, so when you and I see each other...
Ow, ow!
Oh, there's just stars in the air and hearts, little floaty hearts and googly eyes like in a cartoon.
It's terrifying. We see each other,
this means that the dorsal and ventral pathways are working together.
Yes, but it's a little bit more complicated than just that.
Of course it is.
The brain, blah, blah, blah. How you and I recognize faces is the result of many areas of the brain working in unison. Neurons in the temporal lobe respond to particular features of faces. The dorsal pathway deals with the emotional responses to those faces. The ventral pathway helps to place the face, etc. It's a big web of things working together.
Very complicated. Very cool. Love hearing you talk like that.
Comprehensive studies have found that neuropeptides also correspond to face processing. For instance, the neuropeptide oxytocin plays a significant role in recognizing face and emotion. Some people who suffer damage to the frontal lobe or the hypothalamus parts of their brain actually lose their ability to recognize and identify familiar faces altogether.
I'm so glad you give yourself all the big hard words. Okay, so does this mean that people suffering from Capgras usually have some sort of brain injury then?
Oftentimes, yes. Interestingly, though, Capgras delusion was initially thought to only affect women. But as more cases have been recorded, that's been proven false, thankfully. Capgras delusion happens to people of any gender and all ages, though it is more likely to occur in women. It often arises in people who've suffered a stroke or a traumatic brain injury, people with other brain conditions such as Parkinson's or epilepsy, or those with schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. One research study estimated that people with schizophrenia and dementia made up 81% of all Capgras delusion cases.
Oh, so does that mean that people affected with Capgras are usually older? Because dementia is much more common in people over 65, those eligible for their AARP card. Shouts out, Dad! Woo! Let's go, Randy!
Woo! Radiant Randy.
He's going to love that name.
And hello to you as well, Super Cheryl. I actually have an AARP card.
Wait, you do?
Yeah, perhaps because my name is Rose, but I've been getting them sent to me since I was 16.
What? Why have you been holding out on me? We got to start using those hot deals and discounts.
Ooh, and we can wear cute little old disguises since we both barely look 25. Actually, we've seen what it looks like when I try to turn you into an old man. Yeah. Just check out our Joe Biden video, everybody. It was a catastrophe. Anyway, really. To answer your brilliant question, usually Capgras affects people that are a bit older, but not always. In fact, I stumbled across a case about an 11-year-old girl.
Ooh, now we're into story time. Okay, can we call her Emma?
You know it. Also, this is a PSA that if anyone ever needs a name for a baby, a pet, or a beloved artifact, Brandon is the man to go to.
Just email your request to RoseStacy.
Okay, so Emma seemed like the perfect kid growing up. She showed normal learning abilities and had good social skills, and even though her parents described her as shy, nothing seemed out of the ordinary. Until.
Oh boy, this one's going to be rough, huh?
Until she suddenly became reserved and emotionally unstable.
Emma started to develop suspicious thoughts about the possibility of being harmed by her parents. Accompanied by high levels of anxiety, which must have been terrifying for an 11-year-old girl, these symptoms worsened and Emma was referred to the emergency room for hallucinations and delusions towards her parents.
Once there, she stated that after a short trip away, her parents had been replaced by imposters, and that the new people mimicking them were planning to poison and kill her. At this point, she showed depressive symptoms with frequent mood swings, sadness and crying, which I would as well if I thought my parents were trying to poison and kill me, a loss of energy, and difficulty sleeping and concentrating.
It's horrible. How did her parents feel about this? I cannot imagine the horror of having a kid.
That would be horrifying.
Okay, yes, kids can be wildly disturbing, but even more horrifying to have a kid who just suddenly one day claims that I was an imposter trying to kill them.
As you can imagine, it was really hard for Emma's parents. They showed a sense of guilt and went into their own state of depression. They weren't quite sure how to support Emma, and at one of their visits, they revealed that they were finding it difficult to care for her given her delusions and expressed frustration and anger toward Emma herself.
Well, a terrible situation to be in. Of course, you want to be a good parent, but your child not only doesn't trust you, doesn't even believe you're you, and is hostile toward you. What did the doctors say was the cause of her delusions?
Well, Emma was normal at both a physical and neurological level. Her MRI did reveal a cyst, but it was deemed to be of non-pathological relevance, meaning that they did not think it would interfere with her ability to function, and it did not seem to be the cause of her delusions. She was administered a combination of medication known as...
Oh boy. All right, gotta warm up my voice here.
Every day.
Here come the medication melodies.
Risperidone.
Risperidone.
And Zoloft.
Zoloft. That one we didn't really have to do, did we?
I knew how to pronounce that one. A significant reduction in the severity of her symptoms was detected after 6 months of treatment.
Woo-woo!
And Emma started to recognize her parents, and the delusion characterized by her belief of them being replaced by imposters disappeared.
All right.
Yes.
Thankfully, through a combination of medication and time, Emma was able to recover, and her relationship with her parents was repaired as a result.
Woo!
While her parents understandably struggled with their daughter's diagnosis, this story is a helpful reminder that it's really important for loved ones to show compassion and extra understanding while someone they know may be struggling with mental illness, even if they can't quite comprehend why it's happening.
It is an illness after all, and in Emma's case, her brain was telling her something that she had no choice but to listen to. Emma was lucky to have her family willing to help figure out a cure despite the hurt initially caused by her delusions. Although not present in Emma, a notable feature associated with Capgras delusion is an increased risk of violent behaviors.
Oh boy.
Often because of suspiciousness and paranoia. Our next case deals with a man who thought he had been violent as a result of his suspicions, but it was revealed that he never was. In 2016, a 24-year-old male veteran,
whom we will call Benjamin, Ben.
Ben.
In 2016, Ben admitted himself into the hospital. He stated that he was looking for help with emotional stabilization and self-harm prevention. He said, "I feel everything is unreal. I feel suicidal and guilty." And he revealed that he wanted to walk into traffic or shoot himself in the head due to increasingly distressing thoughts and memories.
Unlike Emma, Ben had received an extensive range of mental health diagnoses throughout his life, including major depressive disorder, anxiety disorder, cannabis use disorder, adjustment disorder, and borderline personality disorder.
Ben had no history of brain trauma, but he had gotten into a motor vehicle accident.
which he later admitted to doctors had been the result of a suicide attempt that caused an intestinal rupture and colostomy replacement.
After a few hours in the hospital, Ben began to claim that he had raped his ex-girlfriend and that he had hit his mother with a padlock so badly that you could no longer identify her face.
Oh my gosh. Both the ex-girlfriend and the mother stated that these claims were false and that Ben had never gotten violent with either of them.
What?
When doctors told Ben this, he refused to accept it and stated that he thought his mother was not real and that she had been replaced by government employees wearing her disguise, sent to extort confessions from him for violent actions he had committed while in the military.
So clearly, Ben was dealing with a lot of mental distress combined with a previous physical injury to his body. So did doctors find anything wrong with his brain that could have caused his delusions?
Ben's diagnosis included visual hallucinations, specifically blurs that he saw next to his bed in the morning that would disappear as he tried to touch them.
Oh, that's scary.
His diagnosis also included a depressed mood, anxiety, hopelessness, and insomnia, which is more of what he had been diagnosed with throughout his life. Mm-hmm. There was nothing wrong, however, with the physical makeup of Ben's brain, and he began seeing a psychiatrist who diagnosed him with schizophrenia form disorder, exacerbation of major depressive disorder with psychotic features, and cannabis use disorder. He then prescribed Ben a combination of, get ready,
here we go,
get ready, doloxetine,
doloxetine,
and risperidone.
Risperidone. Throughout his treatment, Ben reported his mood as depressed and anxious, and his thoughts contained delusions, suicidal ideation, and paranoia. But, thankfully, he denied any homicidal thoughts or thoughts of harming others at this stage.
That's good. Mm-hmm.
He no longer believed that he had harmed his ex-girlfriend or his mother.
Also good.
Yes, and while his insight and judgment remained poor, his mental status examination revealed no notable deficits in cognition.
Good again. Mm-hmm. Ben was cooperative with his doctors, but 3 days into his hospitalization, he stated that he believed that his entire family had now been replaced by imposters. He began to severely distrust members of his family and refused to communicate with them when they contacted him.
Oh man, so his delusions now got even worse than before.
It seemed so. And the doctors, as a result, prescribed a new combination of medication used to treat mood disorders and insomnia, aripiprazole.
Aripiprazole. I was alone on that one.
I have to say all of these twice.
Okay, you're right. All right, fine. We'll let that one slide.
And trazodone. Trazodone. On the fifth day, Ben showed improvement and began to doubt the validity of his own beliefs.
That's good.
Oh, yes. So medication's working. Ben stated that he no longer believed that his family members were imposters.
Okay, what's wild to me is that he thought all this without even seeing their faces or hearing their voices. So Ben believed that his family were imposters even when they weren't around.
That's a great question, Brandon. While some people suffering from Capgras delusion are able to still recognize their loved one by voice alone, some people's delusions are so strong that they occur without their loved ones even being around. Unfortunately, in this case, while Ben was suffering from Capgras, he refused to communicate with them altogether, so it's impossible to know if he would have been able to recognize their voices as actually belonging to his family if he had spoken to them.
Okay.
All of this makes me very grateful that you know it's me, right? You know it's me?
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally you. It's totally Rose over here. And thank you, Rose, I know it's you and you're wonderful and beautiful.
Wow, he's called me beautiful so often throughout this podcast.
I'm getting paid a lot. Thank you, Rose, for another wonderfully researched episode of just straight up brain flukery on this one. I'm Brandon Ryder.
And I'm Rose Stacy.
Or are we?
Mango Danger Doodle Stacy.
Brain Fluke was created by Rose Stacy and is hosted by Brandon Ryder and Rose Stacy. Original music by Jeremy Verwise.